Document is 19-1189, Pipes versus United States. We're ready whenever you are, Ken. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sherry Cannon. I'm here representing the appellant, Malcolm Pipes. Mr. Pipes is seated at counsel table because he is a member of the bar of this court. The facts of the matter are not in dispute. A complete and manifest injustice has been done to Mr. Pipes through no fault of his own.
Can I just ask you kind of a housekeeping question, which is the,
yes, ma'am,
the parameters of the relief you're seeking here? Because, I mean, in the Court of Federal Claims opinion, they talk about various things that your client has asked for at Appendix 5, whereas, I mean, my initial impression, we were just talking about disability retirement, and there are other things that were requested, at least at some stage of the proceeding. So what are you seeking as your relief here?
Well, he's seeking a disability retirement retroactive to the date that he was separated, which is September of 2006, but in order to do that, my understanding is he needs to be returned to active duty in order to separate him. So what we're asking this court is to take to order that he was in active duty training. He was injured in the line of duty.
What about in what she indicates you asked for is to be reimbursed for all medical bills from the effective date of the permanent retirement, which you're asking for retroactively, and be placed on active duty orders and afford him an opportunity to rent a medical, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
right?
I know what you're talking about.
Is that still in the case?
That's a good question. I believe that if this court were to order that he should have been retired on disability in September 2006, that the return to active duty is something that has to be done in order to do the rest to affect the order of this court.
Does he have, if we were to retroactively assign permanent disability, do we have to retroactively, in order to reach that conclusion, we have to conclude that he was on some sort of inactive duty status?
Yes, ma'am.
And under what we've been able to discern from some of the stuff that we've gotten in the record, that would have required that he either got paid for that period of time or got points for that period of time. Do you agree or disagree with
that? I completely disagree with that. The pay and points is under Section A of Sec 10 USC 101D7A for inactive duty training. The government has ignored B. You do not have to be paid. B is the statute that we're proceeding under. Pardon me?
A is for inactive duty training.
Right, and B is also for inactive duty training.
Yeah.
But you do not need to be paid. If you look at the other statutes that are applicable and Air Force regulations that are applicable, 10 U.S.C. 12315A2 also says the reservist may be ordered to other duty with or without pay. So it's a misnomer. It's a red herring in this case. As well as the AFMAN is only concerned with 10 U.S.C. 101D7A, which is an active duty training prescribed for the reserve by the secretary concerned under Section 206 of Title 37. That is regular and active duty training. UTAs, weekend warriors, the 2 weeks of duty they have to do. What we are concerned with is Section B, which is not the same as Section A. All of the authority shows that you can, in fact, be doing an active duty training without pay, that's not a requirement. The requirement to be paid...
So he would not, if we were to hold that he had an active duty training under B, he would not be entitled to pay?
No, and he's not asking for pay for that period of time.
Nor points.
Nor points. He's not making that contention. He's saying that he was in an active duty status because he was ordered under a valid AFI to participate in a program by his commander, which they've acknowledged. The only issue in this...
When you say it's valid, that's a question in the case.
The court found
it was not a valid order. The Court of Federal Claims held it was not a valid order.
Right. But we believe it is a valid order because the AFI under which he was ordered to run, okay, that's 10242-248, is a valid Air Force instruction. That valid Air Force instruction required Mr. Pipes at a minimum to exercise 3 times a week, but because he had failed his fitness exam 4 times, they enrolled him in this program. He could not be enrolled. If he decided he wasn't going to do it, he could have been involuntarily and administratively removed from the Air Force.
Well, let me ask you, let's take out this SFIP and just assume that cutting off what you said midway, which is he failed his exam, his fitness exam 4 times. At some point, I don't know what at some point he's not allowed to continue in the reserves, right? I mean, what's the limit to how many times you can fail your fitness exam?
I don't know about the reserves back in that period of time. A little historical context might be helpful. Nowadays, I don't believe people would be allowed to fail it 4 times. Back then,
you mean they'd be out?
Yes.
Okay, well, let me then just go on. If they had ordered, if he failed it 4 times and his supervisor or somebody in the chain of command said, you know, you're going to be out unless you do enough exercise to get yourself fit. So you better do enough exercise to get yourself fit. Is that this case? Is that covered with this case? An order by someone to get yourself in shape in order to be able to pass the exam?
I think that's too broadly written. The government also thinks we're saying anybody out there playing
pickup. Okay, well, how is that too broadly? So what's the broadest reading you would give to this case?
The broadest reading is somebody that was ordered pursuant to this AFI to enroll in a fitness program and exercise 5 days a week, filling out forms that prove that you are doing it, and failing to fill out the forms, failing to do the exercise gets you administratively separated, or filling them out, doing the exercise, and still failing can get you separated, is not the same as saying, I think you ought to pick up basketball on the weekends to maintain your fitness, which is not what this is. Every reservist and every member of the military must maintain fitness. We are not arguing that just being out there maintaining your fitness means you're on an active duty status. We are saying that under the program that was in effect at the time that came into an existence post 9/11, and that's why it came into existence, the Air Force determined after 9/11 that its reservists were not fit and they needed a more strenuous program.
And when was he enrolled in the program? In 2000?
2004.
So he was doing this weekly routine and he suffered his ailment in 2006.
Yes, ma'am.
So for 2 years, he was undergoing this fitness program. Did he have a fitness exam during the interim period? I don't recall what dates.
Do you mean the fitness test with the runs?
Right,
he failed it 4 times.
Even during the interim period where he had already been enrolled in this, or did that precede his enrollment in this program?
Yes, so he had failed it. He was doing the 3 times a week, which is what everybody was required to do. But because of his failures, they increased it to 5 days a week.
When you say 3 times a week, what everybody was required to do, everybody enrolled
in the
this
reserves.
Program?
In the reserves were required to be fit and to exercise. He was required to do it five times a week.
So why is it? What is enrolling in this program a limiting principle? Because what if you say it would, seems like you're suggesting it was clear that he had to, in order to pass the fitness thing, he upped from running three times a week to five times a week. So if the supervisor said to him, you know, you failed four times, you better be running five times a week or you're not going to be able to get your exertion level up enough to pass this exam, leaving aside this SFIP program and enrollment in that, is that sufficient to put him in a position where you would say he would should be covered?
Depending on the context, I think so. That isn't the context of this case, but I believe that that's possible.
So it's not about the program itself. It's about an order or requirement by someone that he do any exercise or a certain amount of exercise, like the difference between running three times a week and five times a week. What are the limiting principles here?
The limiting principles, to use your words, are that he was ordered to do the exercises five times a week or be under the penalty of separation from the Air Force for failure to comply with the valid order under the AFI of his commander. And there's no question in this
case.
Well,
if he didn't comply with that, what you call an order, if he didn't pass his fitness exam, he would have been removed too, right?
Correct. And so this was the Air Force's effort to correct his fitness levels, but unbeknownst to him, the issue wasn't really his fitness. He had an underlying health condition.
What about if he hadn't exactly been ordered to do it, but if his supervisor had said to him, you know, the fact is that if you don't run five, you got two choices here. Either you run five times a week, or it's clear you're not going to pass your fitness exam and you're going to be removed. Those are your two choices. Is that enough to be an order that would compel him to be on, in your view, inactive duty status?
Put that way, I don't believe it would. Because
so what's the difference between that and this?
Because you're suggesting in your scenario that he's giving him a suggestion that, hey, I think that it's possible you have choices A or B.
Well, your choice is what? It's kind of a constructive thing. If you don't follow this order, we all know you're going to be removed because you're not going to be able to pass your fitness test.
I still think there's a distinction there between being ordered under a valid AFI that says you must do this versus we know what's going to happen to you, is what you're saying. We know what's going to happen to you should you fail to follow what I'm suggesting.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yes, ma'am.
I just don't want you to leave the record of this oral argument without making this clear for me. You distinguish between three times a week and five times a week. It's my understanding that Mr. Pipe was ordered to do these exercises five times a week. I don't see any evidence in this record that everyone else was ordered to do it three times a week. I understand that the document suggests that reservists do it three times a week, but your distinction that you've made, it seems to me, is between someone being ordered where they really have no choice but to comply and a recommendation.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
So that is correct.
You're not suggesting that everyone else, every other reservist, was ordered to do this exercise three times a week. That could, in fact, be a problem. If he was ordered to do it three times a week and had a stroke, you'd probably be here still, right?
Correct. The issue is the order. The reservists as a group had an issue with their fitness post 9/11. The Air Force.
And it was recommended.
The Air Force recommended.
This three times a week, but that's different from being ordered.
Correct. He was clearly ordered. The question, obviously, before the court is whether that order into this particular activity
also
constituted an active duty status.
There's also the question about whether or not the order was lawful. Because the Corrections Board found it was not lawful. Foreign Federal Claims affirmed that finding. At what point in time was Mr. Pipes ever in duty status?
When you're called to duty as a reservist during your unit training activities on weekends, your 2 weeks a year.
But at what point in this instance, the government's arguing that we can ignore the order because the order was not valid because you can't order people to do things if they're not in duty status. Is that your understanding of the government's argument as well?
That is my understanding of their argument, but I believe that's so circular.
Well, just let me ask you, define the points in time on the chronology here when your client was in duty status so that he could be ordered. You would agree that your client cannot be ordered to do something when he's not in duty status, right?
Yes and no. I believe there's standing general orders that all reservists must comply with, even when they're purely civilian, such as refraining from drug use or fraternization.
Right, pertinent to this case.
Pertinent to this case, we argue that when he was running, per the direction, which was verbal and in writing, to do so under the AFI, that he went into duty status the minute he stepped out of his home.
You say that's because you believe he was in an IDT.
It's correct.
Circular. You know, the argument gets a little circular as to status, because it seemed to me that the government had a pretty good argument that if you were not in duty status, you couldn't be ordered to do something, and so you could ignore that order.
I don't believe you can ignore an order of your supervisor. It's just like if you were a civilian, you comply
under the Justice Code if it's a lawful order.
Right. Well, you either comply and grieve later, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You comply and grieve later. You must comply with orders that appear lawful on their face. And this he was not being ordered to do something that was clearly unlawful on its face, such as commit a war crime or shoot civilians. He was given an order that...
If he's not in duty status, he can't be ordered. I mean, if you're not in duty status, you're not wearing the uniform, you're not on the base, you're not performing any services, right? Put us in a time frame so we understand what Mr. Pipes was not called to active duty at any of this time when these things happened, right?
Correct.
So he was in non-duty status.
So we argue, just like what occurred in Wake and in the other cases we cite, Wake and Brown, et cetera, because he was doing activities incident to his service commitment, i.e., he was running pursuant to being ordered to do so under a valid AFI.
But
that is when he's in
AFI. What's the AFI?
10248, which
right.
is the which
That's
is the Air
the general
Force
regulation. There's no order in that.
You must comply with them. The order itself came from his supervisors and the commander to follow the AFI, to fill out the forms to prove that he ran.
Okay.
The other reservists do not have fitness issues. And his was a valid health issue, but others who do not have fitness issues aren't filling out forms proving that they're running, or if this was purely voluntary, he wouldn't
issue,
be filling out forms.
If I'm correct, you know, we've spent some time worrying about this case. On the form issue, my understanding is that you asked the Air Force to supply you with copies of the forms that he submitted, and they didn't do it.
Correct. They don't.
But they're
they
not
don't,
denying that he.
They are not, denying,
not denying that he, while doing his running in bonnet, he was regularly filling out the forms and sending information back to wherever you send it, saying, I'm doing what I was told to do.
Yes, sir. The facts in this
but
case...
there's a missing A-40. There's no A-40 in this.
That's a different form. Okay, so the forms...
That's the form that starts the program.
No. The 1975 form are the forms that Mr. Pipes was filling out proving that he was running or doing exercise pursuant to the order of his commander to exercise five times a week.
But
the 40 and the AFMAN, those forms, they have absolutely nothing to do with Section B of the statute.
How do we know that, other than the fact that you just said it? How do I know the AF form 48 doesn't apply to any form of inactive duty training?
Because the other statutes that are in the record and that apply clearly say you can be ordered to other duty without pay. So if you can be ordered to duty without pay, then you clearly aren't under A, which is where
you're being paid. But the form calls for pay and non-pay.
That's for points, sir. That's for points. A reservist gets points for service, and they accumulate a certain number of points, and that gets credited to their service commitment, such that when they retire in other circumstances than we have here, they have a sufficient number of points to retire. It's apples and oranges.
You're telling me that the Corrections Board and the Court of Federal Claims are just dead wrong when they say Form AF-40A is required for anybody entering into any form of inactive duty training.
Yes, sir. That is what we're saying. And if you look at the
How do I know you're right?
Well, look at the other statutes that say you don't have to be in pay. If you don't have to be in pay, you don't have to fill out the 40A, because that says in order to get paid, you have to have...
The statute says if you're not being paid, you don't have to fill out the form?
Correct. We believe that's what the statute means. And if you look at the...
Can you cite us? Is that cited in your... That statutory provision, is that cited in your brief?
The other statutory provisions that talk about that you do not have to be in pay status are cited in the brief. There are several of those. If you look at this...
Well, you just said the other.
But the very form calls for non-pay status.
For points.
Doesn't say for points.
But that's what it's...
doesn't say for points.
But that's what... In order to fill out that form, you have to be 4 hours in status to get pay or points. That's what the AFMAN is talking about, that the Court of Federal Claims also cited, which is simply... not on point. If you look at the other Federal Circuit cases, the Eighth Circuit, the Second Circuit.
I'm sorry. Can you, because I missed taking it down. What are the statutory or the regulatory sites that you are giving us to say that AF Form 40A does not apply to this circumstance? Can you just show me what they are?
Okay. So if you look.
Are they cited in your brief?
Yes. If you 10 U.S.C. 12315A2. Says a reservist may be ordered to other duty without pay.
Okay,
so you wouldn't be filling out a form if you can be ordered to duty without pay.
I'm sorry, you're going way too fast.
I'm
cited in your brief? It would be easier if you could just give me something in your brief where you cited it. It would be easier for me to find it. Sorry about that.
I believe it's in our reply brief. It's 12315A2. That's 10 U.S.C. And it is in our reply brief. Because I'm looking at our brief.
Great. Oh, so that's two.
That's why the Anti-Deficiency Act doesn't apply either, because military members can work without pay during a time of a government shutdown. And provide voluntary services. The Section B speaks to voluntary services. Voluntary means without pay. The statute itself is very clear on its face that voluntary is voluntary.
You made an argument before the Corrections Board that there was a distinction, a material distinction, between the AFI-04 and the AFI-06. The JAG had cited the 06 incorrectly.
Correct.
And you made an argument there that was reflected in the board opinion, stating your views as to why there were material differences between the two. And the board concluded, disagreed with you, and said there were no material differences. I didn't see an argument in your blue brief resuscitating your material differences argument that you made to the board.
We didn't, because the 06, the reason we were calling that attention to the to the judge in that case and to the board was that the 06 AFI wasn't applicable at the time of the injury.
Well, I understood that. Okay. But, I mean, you had made an argument, because I read and reread the board's opinion several times, and you were making let's say there were material differences that mattered for your case. I didn't see you making those arguments, the same argument in your blue brief.
No, because we believe the government corrected its error and cited the proper, has now cited the appropriate and proper AFI.
We are way beyond our time.
I know,
so
I'm sorry.
We'll restore rebuttal time. Why don't we hear from the government?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court. The trial court correctly held that Mr. Pipes was not on an active duty training when he suffered a stroke 12 hours after his self-directed running.
Well, so we're obviously having some concerns here. And one of them, it seems to me, if you have other arguments, you can throw them out here. But the main argument by the government seems to be that he wasn't required to comply with an unlawful order.
and this was an unlawful order.
Because correct.
There's no dispute that he was ordered or told by his several supervisory layers to do this. What's the rules there? I mean, as your friend said on the other side, he's ordered to do something. He takes that as an order. Is he supposed to grieve that order or violate that order and then adjudicate whether or not it was lawful or unlawful?
There are several different things that Mr. Pipes could have done. One, he could have grieved the order, as Your Honor stated. Also, because the order on its face was not lawful, requiring him to perform duties outside of his on-duty time, then he could have validly ignored that order, and it was not a valid order under which he would
Well, firstly, I guess my first question is, how is he supposed to know and be able to evaluate? I assume the military wants people to accept the orders as if they're lawful in the first instance. And two, when you mentioned grieve, I mean, is he supposed to refuse to comply and then grieve or adjudicate the lawfulness of the activity of the order?
Well, Your Honor, under the Articles 90 and 92 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, you can disobey an order, but if you're wrong, then it is at your peril. So if you're wrong, then you can be subject to discipline. So if Mr. Pipes thought that on its face this was an unlawful order, he chose to disagree, and it was later determined to be lawful, he could be punished. Here, the order itself saying perform something off-duty for which you will receive no pay or points was by its nature an unlawful order. And he could have disobeyed that order and been subject to no penalties. Now, should he have...
Can I ask you, assume that someone is in an active duty training. There's no question about the fact that it's a form of inactive duty training under A, one of the list of the five things, okay? If an order is issued to him during that, is that an enforceable order, right?
Yes, Your Honor, because
while he's on active duty.
Yes.
Okay. Now, my understanding is that when he came in for a UTA, a unit training assembly, is that what a UTA is?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. If he's in a UTA, the UTA is deemed to be a form of IDT, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So am I wrong that he went into a UTA for his assessment?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And while he's in his UTA's assessment, they're measuring him up and whatnot, and then they say to him, guess what? You're in trouble from you need to get some exercise. And if the order was issued to him while he's in the UTA, the orders that he was given, aren't those orders valid because he's getting the order while he's in a IDT?
Not exactly, Your Honor, because if he was...
Let me just finish up, because yes. Just assume that the order was issued to him. He's in the unit, wherever the unit is. They've assessed him. The doctor says to the boss, the commanding officer, this guy needs to be in a SFIP, and so he comes in and gives him the order. Now, the order is issued while he's in an IDT, but it's with regard to activity outside the IDT, is your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's, which is why the order itself at that point, if Mr. Pipes was ordered to do something during his IDT time and he disobeyed that order, then he would certainly be subject to punishment.
Well, that would be like during the UTA, the assessment, the doctor says step on the scales and he refuses to do that.
Correct, Your Honor. Or document what you have done outside of your UTA time to improve your fitness. If he was instructed to document that when he was in UTA and he disobeyed that order, then he would be subject to punishment.
Well, what's the difference between that order and the order that's issued as a result of the assessment that happened in the UTA?
What Mr. Pipes was asked to do was not just do something during his UTA, but then, according to Mr. Pipes, he was ordered to exercise at least 5 times a week, to run, to do push-ups, to do sit-ups. That order itself, even if given to Mr.
Isn't the real question whether or not he was put into an IDT by that order while he was in a UTA? if that's the case, that he was put into IDT, right?
Yes, Your Honor. If he was put into IDT, then he would
by
be
the order.
By the order. But there are no indicia in the record that Mr. Pipes was put into IDT because there was no Form 40A, as Your Honor correctly pointed out. And to address one of the points that came up earlier, if at appendix page 246, it discusses pay or points only. Now, opposing counsel contends that reservists can be ordered to perform without pay. But according to the IDT provisions, the AFMAN at page 189, there had to be pay or points, which is exactly what Form 40A contemplates.
But can't he waive points?
Can you waive points?
Sure, he doesn't have to accept the points.
Well, but also look at, what about her citation, like it's in gray at page 1, where she cites IDT, I guess she's citing a statutory 10 U.S.C. 1231.5, whatever. It says any additional special additional duties authorized by reserve component personnel by the secretary concerned and perform them in connection with prescribed activities with or without pay. So why is that not relevant?
First, Your Honor, that does not address points. It states that there can be no pay. It doesn't state that it can be without pay or points. If the secretary, in theory, could order everyone to work all the time without pay or points, then that does run afoul of the Anti-Deficiency Act. And there would be certainly many more claims under perhaps the 13th Amendment because you are ordering people into involuntary servitude for an indefinite period of time. Here, the IDT that is required pursuant to the AFMAN 36-8001 requires that there be advanced authorization, that the advanced authorization be filled out by Form 40A, which is then signed by Mr. Pipes, by his supervisor.
You're just eliding your adversary's argument that the 40A only applies to capital A in the statutory definition.
Well, Your Honor, the special additional duties are delineated in 4.1 in the AFMAN, the crediting IDT.
What? But, and the statute has A and B, right?
The statute,
and he's not trying to qualify under A, he's trying to qualify under B.
Everyone agrees that Mr. Pipes is trying to
right.
claim these are special additional
right.
duties.
So why is it necessarily so that Form 40A applies to A and B?
If Your Honor goes to the sites and the way that it's laid out, there's 10 U.S.C. 101 D7B as well as 38 CFR 3.6 D2. These set out the special additional duties have the same language. 38 U.S.C. 206 A3 large A double I, that explains that there must be pay performed for inactive duty training. The AFMAN then in turn defines the special additional duties, and that's at appendix 189, paragraph 4.1. These special additional duties, there are only five of them, as the trial court correctly held, and none of the order supposedly given to Mr. Pipes does not fit into any of these duties. Then when you continue going through IDT authorization, there must be the Form 40A, and there must be for pay and points or for points only.
Well, your list of five argument doesn't leave any room for B to operate.
Well, with respect to, I'm not sure if I understood
well,
Your
you
Honor's
have,
question.
Your argument now, which is that it was made below, was that there have been the military has defined IDT and said there are five kinds of IDT, right?
Yes.
And your adversary's argument is, well, that's with regard to A, not B.
The IDT, the special additional duties,
give me an example of a special, let's say, the SFIP, you say, is not on the list of five, and therefore it can't be a special additional duty.
Well,
so give me an example of a special additional duty that would suffice.
If I can point the court to appendix page 8.
Could give me an example, can you?
An example of one of the five types?
I know I've got the list of five here, and we agree that SFIP is not there.
Yes.
So what is a special additional duty that's authorized?
So that would be, for example, if there was a Form 40A filled out for a four-hour period of time of training that was required. That would be a special additional duty, and the training could be for anything. And
Can I just clarify? Are you saying that this would be a special additional duty that he had to run five times a week if there had simply been an AF-40 filled out? If that form had been filled out, this would qualify. If the run took him 4 hours to complete, it would be a four-hour period. If he was ordered, there's no question he was ordered to do it. That's accepted in the record. So if only the form had been filled out, that would have been the magic difference in this case?
No, Your Honor. There would have also had to be pay and points or points assigned as well. And the Form 40A, by its nature, necessarily involves pre-authorization to occur. So there would have to be each of those items before then this could be considered special additional duties. And if I may direct the court, under 101D7A, those duties prescribed for reserves by the Secretary under Section 206 of Title 37, the trial courts explained what those duties are. What we all are referring to is B, under the special additional duties, which are those five items set forth by the IDT, not the, and according
the
to the
five term, items are special?
The five types of IDT which are permitted.
How do we know that?
If the trial court refers to the statutes at Appendix 8 and 9, as well as the AFMAN 36-8001.
Did the chain of command folks who in the record confirmed that they ordered him, that he was ordered to do this, did they have authority to fill out the Form 40A?
If Mr. Pipes' supervisor filled out the form, yes, he would have authority. He would have to seek pre-authorization to do so and determine pay or points to do that.
What does that mean, pre-authorization? At what how high a level? And you just said he had his authority to do that, but he cabined it by saying, except if he has only if he has authorization.
With respect to Form 40A at Appendix Page 246, it requires the reservist's signature, the authorizing official, and the official's signature. And I do not know, Your Honor, if the supervisor was both the authorizing official and the official.
Well, do you know what common practice is? I mean, this kind of thing must happen numerous times every day. We've got a lot of reservists, and a lot of people need to be fit to be called up for duty. So are these people generally, as far as you know, not getting paid for the time in which they do their exercises and their fitness training?
That is correct, Your Honor. They are not getting paid. And as I believe it was the Staff Master Sergeant at Appendix Page 31 stated that, for example, the self-paced fitness improvement plan is voluntary. It has never been IDT. That this is in.
What about the forms that he filled out? Can you give me a little?
Yeah.
Was he required to fill out certain forms at the completion of the training period?
He was filling out the forms. I don't know if they were required to be filled out when he was at in his monthly time when he was on duty
well,
status.
Isn't that probative? I mean, if he was required to fill out certain forms, so at least I assume the government would concede that the time he was filling out the required forms would have been sort of duty status.
Again, Your Honor, that it goes back to whether there was the Form 40A and whether this was for pay or points. And there's no indication whatsoever that there was pay or points or that this form was filled out.
Can I ask you, what would happen, and this is what we talked about early in your argument, these folks order him to do this. He goes to that, he refuses to do it. He won't fill out the forms. He tells them, no, I'm not doing it, or they inquire, and he said he hasn't done it. What's step two?
So if he refuses to do that when he's, if he refuses to, for example, to fill out the form 1975.
Or to do the training.
Or to do the training when he's on an off-duty status, he can be required to perform fitness assessment and physical fitness when he's on in-duty status. And then if he disobeyed that order, then there would be punitive measures. If, however, he is asked about what he did on his
off-duty. What would be those occasions? If he, while he's not called up to active duty, they would be like if he was in a UTA?
Correct, Your Honor. If he's at in his weekend training, for example, when he goes to duty.
I mean, is that what a UTA is, weekend training?
That is one of them, Your Honor.
Okay.
Okay, and so what? But tell me what happens. I mean, he says, no, I'm not going to do it. Somebody bring charges against him? I mean, he's not following an order. We got to parse out at some point in adjudicating whether or not the order was lawful. But what happens at the initial instance?
So if, Your Honor, let's say he shows up to a UTA and says, I don't have any forms, I didn't fill them out, I didn't do the exercise.
Right.
Then they can say, fill out the forms now. And if he refuses to do so, that is punishable. If he shows up without the forms, there is no punishment because he was never lawfully ordered to fill those out when he was off duty. And so that is the distinction where when he is in duty status, he is required to perform lawful orders.
Is it your belief or do you know how often reservists like Mr. Pipe are actually ordered by their commanding officer to participate in SFIP? Because he was ordered. Your response is it wasn't a lawful order. Do you have any sense of whether such unlawful orders are regular in the military?
I do not have a sense, Your Honor, because it is generally understood and required that everyone must be in apt physical shape. And so if somebody, for instance,
Does that mean that this case probably doesn't repeat itself very often, that this is a one-off or an unusual scenario, either because he failed so many times and therefore it's unlikely you'd end up in the situation, or unusual because it's not normal for commanders to issue unlawful orders? There's no question he was ordered. You're saying it was unlawful. It apart from a few good men, it seems, and Jack Nicholson, which I would do a little demonstration for you. My clerks have already seen it, but I'll push that aside because I don't want this case not to seem as serious as it really is. But, I mean, apart from that sort of thing, I mean, I guess what I'm troubled by is your argument that this is an unlawful order, and I want to know, is this the kind of thing that you think happens all the time? So it's really important for him not to get his compensation here, because otherwise there's going to be a long line out the door of lots of people who have been unlawfully ordered. Or are you saying this is an unusual situation, in which case maybe we can look at it through an unusual lens in assessing what to do? I want to know how often these unlawful orders are being issued.
I don't have an exact answer to that, Your Honor. I can say, however, that I'm sure it is not uncommon for someone's commander to say, you need to get in shape, work out.
No, there's a difference. He says this was in writing, and he says it was oral, and he says that he was ordered to do this five times a week, to run five times a week, and then the doctor said, get out and run after taking his blood pressure, recognizing he had hypertension, and then sent him out to run. So there's no doubt this kid, at least on the record we have in front of us, was ordered to do this. This wasn't, you might want to do a little more exercise in order to pass your physical. He was ordered to do specific exercise. At least that's the record we have in front of us as of now. You may be able to dispute whether that's correct at a later point, but what we have in front of us now is he was ordered to do this expressly and specifically.
As to whether there are numerous instances of being ordered specifically to participate in SFIP, which I will point the court to appendix page 103, which is presumably the type of written order that Mr. Pipes is referring to, which contains no indication of the amount of time as to the exercise or the quantum.
I do not understand the government to have disputed that he was ordered to perform, to run five times a week. Did the government dispute that?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is,
so as of now, on the record in front of us, this is not the document that ordered him. The record in front of us, which is undisputed by the government, is he was ordered to run five times a week
and
to do push-ups.
An unlawful order, yes, Your Honor.
And so what I'm trying to get at, because I'm very confused about either is, are lots of orders like this being given to reservists, or was it only Mr. Pipe?
And I don't have an answer to that question, Your Honor. All indications in the record show that SFIP is a voluntary recommended activity. I do not know to what extent there are other commanders who have given verbal orders in the way that Mr. Pipes' commander states he gave Mr. Pipes an order to perform these activities. I will also note that Mr. Pipes at no point in the 2 years of time attempted to get a Form 40A filled out or attempted to obtain points or pay for presumably the exercise he was ordered to perform.
He can waive that, correct? He can waive points, right? He doesn't have to take them.
I do not believe he can waive points because then that gets into the Anti-Deficiency Act concern that he's being completely uncompensated for orders.
Is there magic in the word directs? I noticed that AFI 248 says the Union Squadron Commander directs members in Corps 5 to enter as opposed to saying order. And when I did a word search in AFI 248, 2004, the word order never came up. So I wonder if what a commander thinks he's doing when he tells somebody to go into a SPIP, he's directing him, encouraging him, directing him as opposed to, quote, ordering. I realize in this case we have two persons who said we ordered him to do it. We've got a third person that said, well, they never order people to do that. So
I would say, Your Honor, that with respect to the direction, yeah. if the court looks to appendix page 221, yeah. which is also from the AFI 10-248 supplement okay. that defines the SFIP, yeah. it explains that it's a program that's recommended, that reservists are in non-duty status, so their participation is not mandated. They are encouraged to take part on a voluntary basis. And
well, that means that they're directed as opposed to ordered.
And
that's why I asked if there was any magic, because it's on page 12 of the SIP where I refer to, they say, direct members to end these programs.
And that could be the magic word versus order, or it could be that the commander considered himself to be giving an order rather than a recommendation or a direction, but in fact he was giving a recommendation or direction.
Yeah, well, the problem that members of the panel have is that Mr. Pipes has, there's testimony in the record that he was ordered, like the kind of order that might subject you to a UMJA liability, and he was ordered to do this as opposed to said, well, it's a good idea for you to do this because if you don't do it, you're going to fail another test and then you're going to get kicked out of the reserves.
I would note that the order simply could not be lawful in this instance because the commander would be ordering Mr. Pipes to do something on inactive duty status without taking any of the necessary steps to comply with that status.
Would you agree that probably the only, and from your perspective, the only valid order that could be given to an off non-duty status veteran who's, you know, at home or wherever would be the order saying, I'm calling you up to active duty?
Yes, Your Honor. And otherwise that individual would be...
You could get an order that told you to come to a UJA or whatever. Come in for next year, you're on, you have to come in next weekend or whatever.
Yes, you can be ordered to come in to perform but duty.
Orders that bringing you back in to reserve status, active duty as a reservist. Other than that, you would say there's no class of orders that could be lawfully issued to a reservist in non-duty status.
Unless you are turning into the inactive duty status for those special provisions, yes, Your Honor.
And if you had been put into something that you agreed was inactive duty training and a specific program, then any order issued in connection with that would be a valid order.
Not
inactive duty is duty.
I'm not certain if I understand the court's question.
No, I'm having a situation. I'm just trying to get in my mind the class of orders that you would feel would be lawful exercised towards a person like Mr. Pipes with regard to this fitness issue. So if they had put him into a SFIP and everybody agreed it was a legit put in and it constituted statutory inactive duty training, then any order given to him in connection with that inactive duty training would be a valid order.
If he was validly put into the SFIF and it was for pay or points and the Form 40A was
your
filled out,
your bottom line argument is that there's no SFIF is never has been inactive duty training under any iteration of the AFIs.
Yes, Your Honor. There's no circumstance under which, to my understanding, has been considered inactive duty training.
Can I just ask you one other question, which is sort of a little outside of the box, but it seems to me that at least on the facts of this case, what went down, there was a medical opinion involved. I mean, the problem here seems to have arisen because he probably shouldn't have been doing this running under medical care. There were some doctor observations that confirmed he shouldn't have been, but yet he did. Does the government have any comment on what went down in that scenario?
With respect to the medical advisor's opinion, it appears that there were indications that Mr. Pipes had high blood pressure, whether that was a result of other medication he was taking or not, that Mr. Pipes' personal physician recommended that he go on to blood pressure medication. He was not put onto it. Certainly it is unfortunate that he was...
There was some government medical guy who was checking people out before they undertook this very strenuous exercise program, right?
I believe, yes, there was certainly a medical evaluation completed to determine
if... And that evaluation registered him as having extraordinarily high blood pressure, according to the doctor's notes, correct?
There were indications that, yes, he had high blood pressure. And
I thought the doctor tested him and said, doctor realized he had high blood pressure but didn't tell him. And then the doctor said, you're fit to go out and run.
Yes, Your Honor. And that is why Mr. Pipes has a 90% disability rating service connection.
Yeah.
And is receiving his service connection for the high blood pressure.
Okay. Thank you. Will we store some time for that?
I think the last point that the panel was hitting on is key. If Mr. Pipes had brought a case for medical malpractice, which clearly occurred here, or for being ordered to do something in civilian status under the Federal Tort Claims Act, the government down the street in the district court would be arguing that Ferez bars his claim because he was incident to service when he was injured, i.e. had the stroke. He can't have it both ways. Either he was doing something that he was ordered to do, or he wasn't. So if we look at it from the Ferez perspective, there's clear malpractice. The government admits it. Dr. Carson, the Air Force board doctor, says that the Air Force did do less than desirable medical treatment of this individual.
But what about the points or pay argument the government made? The government insists that since there were no points or pay associated with this, this cannot ever qualify as inactive duty training.
They're just flatly wrong. Look at the other cases where Federal Circuit Courts of Appeals have found people to be in active duty status or in active duty training where they weren't being paid, where they were in car accidents when they were purely civilians, when they're ROTC cadets doing physical fitness training, where they're having heart attacks when they're in between duty statuses. All of those cases in the Second and Eighth Circuit and the Court of Claims don't require these individuals to be getting paid for a short trip from the University of wherever to
the So what is the limiting principle in those cases?
The limit that they what the courts say, and in Wake the court was looking at 101D7B, and they said, but for the order, but for the military status, the injury wouldn't have occurred. If you weren't in the car going to take a test to be a naval aviator, you wouldn't have been in a car accident. But for the order to serve as acting for the colonel, you wouldn't have had a heart attack and you wouldn't have been there. But for being ordered to pass a fitness, these were all lawful orders, but they weren't being paid.
No challenge to the lawfulness of the
right.
Order.
In this case, the government is making an argument that's just off point. It's just not on point.
Can I just ask you a few sort of not related questions, but for my own edification about what's going on here, and you may or may not have the answer to this. He's getting, we've all heard, and it's in the record, that he's getting this disability, the claims from the VA, and he's getting payment for a claim there. Is there some sort of offset if he were to obtain disability retirement? Is all of that stuff cumulative in what a complainant gets, or is there offsets for those sorts of things?
I believe there's some sort of offset for the disability. Okay. The VA compensation is one thing. The military disability retirement is substantially more money and entitles him to benefits that he's not currently getting.
He was 47. So to get disability, when would he otherwise be eligible for his retirement?
60.
Talking about 13 years of being in some sort of retirement. When you get on disability retirement, is there a annual assessment or some sort of assessment as to your ability to work or to obtain employment?
I do not believe it's the same as the civilian FERS or CSRS disability retirement system, where those individuals have to annually or as requested by OPM certify they are physically unable to perform the essential functions of their job. Once the military retires you and says you are not capable of performing military service, you're ineligible, they're not going to call him back in and say...
So that's disability retirement. That's
correct. They're not going to call him back in and say, show me you're not disabled, yeah. So we're going to bring you back to active duty. It's not the same as in the civilian service.
Thank you. That's helpful. Any other questions? Okay. The case, thank you. Thank both sides. The case
both sides for the help and the argument.
Thank you.